What's up? What's good? It's your boy BQ with the Impact Lounge, number one place to be for the Impact Wrestling fan. And this is the Cool Factor podcast, going solo on that ass, just like my man Mike likes to say, quoting some old 90s hip hop there, so I can respect that. But I am in the saddle solo today. TW is on vacation. If you haven't noticed, TW and I both take a lot of vacations. I think this is his second one this year. I've had two. I got my third one coming up soon because I'm one of those dudes. I work hard, but I play hard too. So I'm always talking about being at work all the time. It's for a reason. I play hard when it's time to enjoy with the family. I like to take that opportunity. So that's what's up with TW right now. Hope he's enjoying himself. He will be back with me next week. We were doing pretty good for a little while, getting the show out a lot earlier. And this particular one is coming at you guys on Tuesday, which I hate doing Tuesday. I always say that. But the weekends that are so difficult for me is my Air Force Reserve weekends. Like with my normal job, I can get away with watching Impact off to the side of my phone when I'm at work. But when I'm doing my military duty, I cannot. It's not that I can't, I just don't have the reception to do it. But it's easy in my normal job to just put the phone next to me and, I can watch it like that. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to finish watching Impact until today. I started some of it last night, finished it up today. So I'm going to talk about it here. And you guys know when I'm riding solo, I tend to go through it fairly quickly. But there are some other things I want to talk about first, things that are on my mind. If it's your first time here, consider hitting that subscribe button. We are live streaming today. I will not be getting into any kind of comments or anything when I'm doing it by myself. If I'm messing with the comments, it makes it kind of difficult to do. It's a lot easier when TW is rolling with me. So the first thing that I've got on my mind right now is Impact Wrestling merchandise, shirts in particular. Don't get me started on all the other stuff or the things that don't exist. Like, for instance, I say don't get me started, but let's talk about this for a second. Every week, not every week, every month on social media, you see these beautiful photos. The wrestlers, especially in Knockouts, they're sharing them, all the different poses. They're all over social media, all over Instagram. They're the new Twitter profile pictures, bio pictures, whatever they're called. All over the place on social media. You cannot purchase any of these 8x10s on the site. I don't understand that. That's not what I want to talk about. What I wanted to talk about is the t-shirt game. Now, the designs, they're stepping up, especially that latest Trey Miguel one. But what I wanted to talk about is that Steve Macklin came out with a new shirt not long ago. And I'm gonna order. I've got all the Macklin shirts, so this is just another one that I know that I'm gonna order. So when he came at it against all odds, he was dressed like the cameraman. Zips down the hoodie. It was very AEW-esque because they have a way of debuting new merchandise, and they, they tie it into what's going on the show in a way that people are like, "Oh, I want that," So it was very AEW-esque the way he. He pulls down the zipper and he's got the tag him and bag him shirt. Here's my beef with this. That shirt should have released on Shop Impact that night. That second, when that showed up on our screens, we should have been able to go to Impact's Twitter or the Facebook, not the Facebook, because they don't know what they're doing with that anymore, the website, and it should have just been right there. Boom. Instead, the shirt comes out a week and a half later. Like, get the new Steve Macklin shirt. When the iron is cold, it's cool, it's on ice. So that kind of thing, I don't understand. It's been actually bothering me for a good week or so, ever since the shirt came out. I'm just like, why do they wait so long? This is the benefit. This is the one benefit Impact has with a taped product, because we know there's a lot of disadvantages to taping your show. The one advantage that they have is that they know what's going to show up on TV a week in advance, 2 weeks in advance, 3 weeks in advance. They know what the episode is going to be. They're not doing a live show where they don't know how the audience is going to act. They don't know if they're going to chant something. They don't know if something's going to catch on organically or not. The show is taped. So when that happens, like when you have a debuting guy or someone returning, or you can release this shirt in conjunction with the show as it airs. There's no excuse for it to come out when they release these things. When Mia Yim showed up and she debuted, I understand that was the Impact Plus special, and I think those are live. I know they used to be recorded. I actually have never looked into it. I think they're actually live now. Could be totally wrong. But same shit. When she debuted, there should have been a shirt on deck for her, because that moment where it's new, especially when it's a new face, or if it's, you know, but anything that's new, whatever it is in this world, that release date, that first, that point of impact, that first boom, the first time we see it, that is the hottest possible period you have for that product. And you guys hear me talk about Cornette quite a bit on the show. And he was talking about Matt and Jeff Hardy in AEW. And their first match was some, you know, wrestling some underneath tag team. And he was like, they're never going to be more popular in that company than the first time they showed up together as the reuniting Hardy Boys. Like, you cannot get that back. You can't get that moment back. So why is their first match some throwaway free TV match against underneath talent? It should have been at a debut, at a pay-per-view against like the Bucks or something like that. But the point is, what he's saying is that first moment is the hottest something is going to be. I know I'm talking a lot about this, but it has been bothering me lately. The merchandise is rolling out so slow, and just there's no rhyme or reason for it. I think it would fly off the shelves a lot quicker if you just put it out quicker, because what they're putting out online is just a t-shirt mock-up. It's not, they don't even have to have the shirt printed. They probably print there. I ordered one shirt a couple weeks ago. I don't remember what it was, but it came from Collar and Elbow. So I don't know if they have a deal with them where they outsource, here's a design, boom, they print it. I don't know, but it did come from directly from Collar and Elbow. But other than that, I think they can press fairly quickly, fairly easily. Pretty sure they can do it like on demand. So, man, yeah, that was a little rant about t-shirts and merchandise, but it's, you guys hear me use that phrase like leaving money on the table. That's leaving money on the table when you wait for the iron to just be ice cold and then you put something out. I don't get it, folks. I just don't get it. I think that's all I had about merch. I feel like I had one other point, but I'm not gonna keep beating a dead horse. Another thing I want to talk about, if you guys listen to the AEW Unrestricted podcast, this podcast they do, I think, weekly, Kiera Hogan was the latest guest on there. And of all the Impact talents they have in that company, they haven't had too many do interviews. They've had a few here and there. I was shocked to see Kiera on there, because as long as she was with the company, she wasn't doing jack shit. Now she's part of the baddies. She has a good thing going, and things are starting to take off for her. She's not winning matches or anything like that, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, she's part of, you know, she's working with Jay, who's a TNT champion. She's part of one of the bigger parts of the show. So, but I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that she was the latest interview. In the beginning, it gave you some perspective on what goes through the mind of an Impact star sometimes. So she was talking about Diamante going to, where was it, Tallahassee? Is that where they were doing in Florida at the time? I don't quite remember. Going to the AEW tapings, dark, whatever it was. And she said she was always in a good mood. She's always happy. She was like excited to go to work. And she was leaving every week to do this. And she, you know, Kiera was saying, I was wrestling once a month. And at first she didn't name drop Impact in the first like quarter of this thing. And I was like, oh my God, she's now her? you know. But as the interview progressed, she talked about her time there quite a bit. But it gave me some perspective that Wendy's, you know, when these wrestlers see their peers, because they want to wrestle, they want to work. And even though there's probably a lot out there who enjoy the part-time schedule, it's probably more the people coming from AEW that want the part, I mean, AEW, WWE, who want that part-time schedule. Like, you know, these dudes, Cardona and Heath and stuff, they're probably like, oh, hell yeah, you know what I mean? But some of these younger talents want to wrestle. They want to get out there. Now, Impact's done a better job with that over the years with the Impact Plus specials and things like that. Because there was that one time, I mean, not one time, but many times where they were recording television, you know, 6, 7, 8 episodes at once. And then the wrestlers had nothing to do with the company for months after that until they showed up again. So now, you know, they are showing up to work every month, working a couple days, doing the extra shows, the pay-per-views. And then they found some other stuff for some of them to do. But it gave me some perspective because a young star like that, like, wanted to be doing something. She wanted to wrestle. And when they released Diamante, I said this back when they did it. I said, it's not in their best interest to release someone who's part of a couple in the company. Because if that person moves on and does something bigger, their mate, their partner is naturally going to want to go with them. You feel me on that? And that's basically what happened. If you're listening to the story, she said, I want to be a part of that. I want to do that. You know, she said something really interesting. And I know I mentioned this too, but I didn't say it with full confidence because I didn't know if it was right or not. She said that she never challenged for the Knockouts Championship while she was with the company. And that was the reason, because they straight up asked her, why did you leave Impact? And she said, because, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, but she was basically saying, I did everything I could do there. And to backtrack 1 second, one thing I always said was Kira Hogan was their biggest, at the time, biggest homegrown star. And I don't mean she was a superstar, like she was up here. But on the roster, as far as someone they brought in from scratch and built up, like, they did the best job with her. You know, Rohit was up there too. There's a couple of people who were in the ballpark, but really Kira is the one that they did the best job with. But what she was saying was that she felt like she did what she could do. She was 2 times Knockouts Tag Team Champion. She goes, she wanted to hold the Knockouts title, but they never gave her an opportunity. They never gave her the program to do it. Now, she may have got a title shot here or there, because you know what, that there was times where they hand out the bullshit title shots, you know. I even think she might have, because in her first match, she beat Chelsea Green, and then I know Chelsea won the title, and then she wrestled Chelsea again, so I don't know if it was non-title or what. She might have had like a BS, you know, match here or there, but she never had a program for the title. You know, where people think she might win. She didn't get to cut promos. She didn't get to do anything like that. And, you know, she talked about, well, Mickey James was coming in, and, you know, Ty was coming in, they're bringing this and this. And she saw the writing on the wall. There's no opportunity for me to wrestle for the Knockouts Championship because they're bringing in these big stars into the division. Like, you know, her time came and went, and they didn't take her to that next level. I think her character work and her progression was, I would say, 80% her. You know, I don't think it was anyone doing her a favor. I think that was really her working on herself. But, you know, as the interview progresses, she speaks pretty glowingly about her time there. Really liked what she was doing. She really wants, she talked about Tasha Steelz really wanting Tasha to be her partner in Impact. And there's been speculation that Tasha Steelz is possibly done with the company. And I've heard people say, oh, well, she could join the baddies. Like, no, she's not. I mean, she might end up over there. Don't get me wrong. She's not going to join that faction. That doesn't fit her at all. But now when you got someone like Kiara moving on, now she's passing the word on to people like Tasha Steelz, like, hey, this is what's up over here. Do some dark matches for first few months. Something might open up that you can step into, roll into the main show, you know. I feel like these conversations are happening, but it's a good interview if you're a Kiara Hogan fan, getting a little insight on her. Speaking of interviews, I feel like there was something else I was going to say about let's go ahead and wrap that one up. Speaking of interviews, the Trey Miguel interview on the YouTube channel, it was the new Outside the Ropes or whatever segment they're doing. And I really praise the interview. I thought they did an excellent job with it. They're putting in that music in the background. I don't understand the obsession with it, but for the most part, it was done really, really well. Super over color corrected and all that shit. All the bad habits were part of the video. At the same time, it was really well done. You go to the YouTube channel now, though, and when I reviewed the interview initially, it had like 8,000 views. It has like 9,000 now. So this thing has not done anything, and it worries me because I feel like the company's gonna see that and be like, oh, the people don't want this. And they're gonna like pull the plug. And it's not that the people don't want it, but you guys know I've been preaching for a long time for original content. And the original content's gonna be hit or miss. There's some of it that's gonna do really well and some that's not. I say it all the time. For whatever reason, Impact fans don't wanna hear from Impact stars. They don't want to hear him interview. And that's a lot of the reason I haven't pushed to bring interviews back to the channel, because for some reason, the Impact audience does not care to hear from the wrestlers. They prefer to hear from guys like myself, TW, the TNI guys, the talking nonsense about Impact guys. They want to hear those opinions. They don't want to hear from the stars. So an interview segment probably isn't going to do the best numbers, but it's a start. But my concern is they're going to look at those numbers and be like, okay, that's not what they want, and double down on what they think people do want. The thing is, they've conditioned the audience on YouTube to subscribe to AJ Styles and to the Christopher Daniels stuff and all these guys that aren't here anymore. They've conditioned the people say subscribe to Impact Plus for the library. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're going to post all these old clips. I always call them empty subscribers, right? That's what I refer to them as, because you're getting them to hit that subscribe button. But for what? What are they going to do? Because when you actually start promoting your real product, they're not going to care, because that's not what you're bringing them in with. And I think this was an example of the subscriber base, which is what, over like 4 million now or something like that, being conditioned to say we only care about this channel when we get to watch freaking Slammiversary from 2012 or whatever old match. So that's what I've been challenging them all these years that I've been doing this: original content, give people, because you have to start conditioning them to care about what's going on right now, the wrestlers that are on screen right now. So kind of disappointed to see that, but I hope it keeps going because I thought it was good. I thought it was a good segment. So let's talk Impact. Let's get into Impact. Do I have anything else? When I said I had a point about Kiera, I was transitioning into something else, falling into that sweet spot for Impact right now. And this kind of has to do with where we saw Allen Angels on the show. I feel like we're falling into the sweet spot because now Tony Khan is he's not releasing people, he's not renewing their contracts, or he's offering them per night basis, and they don't really want to do that. Which one has to imagine, why would you turn that down? Because that's probably the best, the better paying wrestling job you're going to find out there. But maybe it's something about, I don't like showing up to TV every single week to do nothing. Like an Impact taping is once a month. AEW, it's like once a week, sometimes twice a week. But I think they're falling into a sweet spot, because these wrestlers who get released from WWE, their first option is to take a step down into, okay, well, I want to go to AEW. The wrestlers who are getting released from AEW, I don't think have that same option. They can't be like, well, okay, well, I guess I'm going to NXT now, because NXT isn't pulling anybody from AEW. They're not pulling people from the indies. I believe they are opening things up to indies again right now, but they're signing the cheerleaders and the high school players and the rugby players and grab ass players, whatever it is. So the wrestlers getting released from that company or not being brought back, there's an opportunity because these guys are still coming from what's really, let's be real, the hottest wrestling company right now is in terms of many things. Whether you enjoy it or not, it's the hottest product at the moment. That's who you want to get guys from. And even if it's some of those lower card, mid card guys, whatever, you know, like you're having, it's an opportunity to start bringing some of those guys along. Maybe they bring a viewer with them here too. Who knows? But I think they're in that sweet spot where it was what they tried to start with the WWE releases, the Black Monday releases, and the Slammiversary, and then now they couldn't do that again this year. I think they can work around things to do something very, very similar with the AEW releases. So we're going to talk about AEW release Allen Angels here in a second. BTI was the first part of the show. I didn't watch it. I never do. Never, never, never. I did mean to watch this one. I just forgot because it was Giselle versus Alicia. I wanted to watch it. Giselle, we already knew she was going to win. And it's weird because every time they have some kind of story with Alicia where she's not Eddie's wife or she has a teammate or a friend or something, it lasts like 2 weeks and then she goes back to exactly what she was doing before, which was jack shit. So maybe they bring her back to the Honor No More stuff and she goes back to being Eddie's wife. Very, very possible. I know she is Eddie's wife, but you know what I mean. Storyline wise, that's just the crutch. All right, so opening show for Impact here, or opening match, I should say, Allen Angels versus Speedball Mike Bailey. I said on the last Cool Factor, I said the guy answering the open challenge is one of my favorite wrestlers. And you'd probably be like, okay, yeah, right. Allen Angels is not one of your favorite wrestlers. His faction that he was in, the Dark Order, was I was a borderline fanatic of that group. So that kind of tells you why I was, you know, he was probably my second favorite guy in the group. But I was a fanatic of the group. I really was. I have all the freaking shirts. I loved everything about them. I love the way they were just would, you know, it's a faction of seven, eight people. They were, you know, they would have some honorary members that would kind of show up, like Ty Conti and things like that. They would intertwine with each other and team with each other's partners and just I really like them from top to bottom. Brody Lee died though, and they became this like weird PG version of Sesame Street. Like they freaking sucked. And it was this faction that I was like crazy about to just freaking trash. And they've started releasing some of those guys. But Allen Angels was part of them. He was nicknamed Number Five. And he kind of had a little goofy mask. He would team up with Number 10. And that was my team right there. Those two together, I really, really liked. But he was a guy I really, really pulled for and pushed. Not pushed, but yeah, just someone I pulled for, someone I really, really rooted for. I got a cameo from him once before. And I was excited when he came out. Now he had this match with Mike Bailey. I thought it was okay. It wasn't super fluid. It was a little clunky. It was a little paint by numbers in certain parts, like the finish, where he was waiting for Mike Bailey in the turnbuckle, which seemed like an eternity. Stuff like that. It was a little hokey. But I will say he got the biggest pop or any kind of ovation of the night. Even the commentary is like, wow, listen to that ovation. They called it an ovation in a room full of 200 people. You know, but they were loud for him. That's where he's from. He never got any real opportunity in AEW. He was part of the Dark Order. But like when they did the Brody Lee tribute night, he was the only guy who didn't wrestle. They put him on the main event of Dark the next night as like a, you know, and he won the main event. So, you know, that was like, hey, we're giving you your shine too. But he never really got that opportunity. He had a couple of really good matches with Kenny Omega and then a really good one with Bryan Danielson. But everything else he did was kind of like job shit, you know? The Dark Order didn't beat a whole lot of people. Him and Ten didn't beat a whole lot of people as a tag team. He showed a lot of flash, a lot of brilliance, a lot of promise, but he didn't win a lot of matches. So him to have this match with Mike Bailey, I think was really important to him because it was a competitive match. He didn't have many competitive ones over there. He wrestled, but they weren't competitive. So I think with a guy like that, that's where he's like, I don't want to come back and do per night stuff because I'm not going to win. I'm showing up every week. You know, a company like Impact could work for him because he could be fairly featured within an X division. Do I think he's going to be back? I think so. But I don't think he's going to be signed. I can see him do the rest of the loop. What worried me a little bit about this match is that Mike Bailey kicked out of his two best moves. The wing snapper, which is his finisher. He kicked out of his freaking finisher in his first match wrestling on Impact. Hits his finisher, middle of the ring. Mike Bailey kicks out. And that's where he held his arms behind him and then put a foot in the middle of his back and fell backwards, kind of like eat defeat. And then he has the angel breaker. But he kicked out of his best moves. So it's hard to be like, okay, yeah, he's gonna come back and start beating people with his finishers. I don't know. I would love to see him in the company because, like I said, he's one of my favorites. I learned to really pull for him over the years. I would love to see him. They did a post-match angle with the Deaners. I'm sorry, not the Deaners, but Deaner and Joe Doring. I thought this made Mike Bailey and Allen Angel Angels look like freaking fools. Because one of the guys is the X Division champion. These two jabrones come down, take him out, and we don't see or hear from them again. I don't know if they rolled out of the ring and just laid there. But I thought they were made to look like fools. And being that one of them is the X Division champion, and he's not even getting his come go, you know, go in the backstage, be like, hey, I challenge Deaner next week, you know, to where, you know, something logical to make it, you know, your champion just got his ass whooped, and then we don't hear from him the rest of the show. So I didn't particularly care for that. I do kind of commend them for starting the show off a little quicker this time. Because they went, you know, fairly quickly into Allen Angel's his entrance. I would have kicked the show off with Allen Angel's entrance. I would have not, no, we own the night, no slow-mo C4 spike, all that crap they like to show. Because it's still fluff for 2.5, 3 minutes. And I've been pointing out before, AEW starts their show in 45 seconds. And that's, if you don't think that's by design, you're wrong. By design. It is by design. That is looking at the numbers, looking at the analytics. Listening to people who know what they're talking about, but we have to start the show off here. We cannot afford to lose viewers. So if it was me, I would have kicked it off with Allen Angels. Boom. And then you can tweet out, tune in right now, Allen Angels, whatever. And even if you want to throw in freaking Wheel in the Night after his entrance so that you give people a chance to tune in, whatever. You know what I mean? But not so much fluff in the beginning. But they kicked it off a little quicker than usual. But this post-match Deaner on the mic, the minute he's, you know, Mike said this on Brace for Impact also. The minute he's just like Josh Alexander, it's like, oh my God. Again? He beat all three of them. All three of them. There's no reason whatsoever for them to call him out. You cannot beat him. You've tried. You tried three times, three different people. You can't do it. And if it was just to get Eric Young out there, okay, cool. But we're getting this again next week. Josh and the Motor City Machine Guns against Violent by Design. I don't care. Now we got three of the best wrestlers in the world on one side, but I don't care. I've seen this 50 times this year. I don't care. Eric Young came out though and said, how did we get here? Saying the world belongs to me. Almost like he's you know teasing something going on with Violent by Design. I don't know. I don't know what more Violent by Design can do at this point, but I think if you handle them right creatively, they can take the next step one way or another. Because they're involved in some big matches recently. Can't just take them back down to the same stuff where backstage Eric Young cutting these promos saying the same thing every time. Like, now you got to take the next step with these guys. But once you call out Josh Alexander, here we freaking go. The Eric Young stuff was okay. But it was good that we saw him back on the screen. I didn't think at the expense of Mike Bailey was necessary, and even at the expense of Allen Angels. Like, why is he going to want to come back? AEW does post-match beatdowns 70% of the time. If you don't believe me, watch a freaking show. Allen Angels has his ass whooped several times after the bell, and then we're bringing him in to just do the same exact thing. Not really into it, but yeah, the Deaner stuff, I keep calling the Deaner. Like, I keep wanting to call them the Deaners. The show as a whole, though, this was one of the best wrestling shows in a long time. And when I say wrestling, I mean actual wrestling. The actual matches on the show from top to bottom. This was one of their better episodes in a while. As a whole, the creative and all this, I don't know. There's nothing pulling me in right now, storyline wise. And it's wild because 3 months ago we had I Don't Know More. We had the Moose stuff, you know, him spearing Josh's wife. We had the Bullet Club stuff, which was kind of interesting at one point. And then all of a sudden you fast forward to now, like, what is truly compelling on the show from a storyline standpoint? Not a whole lot, but the wrestling is good. The wrestling's excellent, but as a wrestling show, this was good. This really was good. So let's see. After that, I'm sorry. Usually I'm used to TW running down the show. Honor No More cuts a promo in the back. I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. With that being said, though, what is this guy's mission? Like, what is the point now? You've lost at the pay-per-view, at the Impact Plus show. You lose every week on television. And why are they after PCO? PCO is the only one who wins out of that group. Eddie doesn't wrestle a whole lot as a part of Honor No More, but he does not have a winning record. I think as a one-on-one guy, he might be like 1-1. We don't see him wrestle one-on-one very much. And then part of the tag team matches, I mean, you know, PCO is the only person who wins matches. He's the only one who beats people. Why are they mad at him? Like his losing is causing them to fall apart. Like, Kenny King doesn't beat anybody. Taven and Bennett, none of them do. Yeah, they have a few wins here or there, but I mean, come on. As a whole, they've been kind of been presented as losers. This storyline is taking so long. And I know if I say something like that, someone's always like, oh, long-term booking. I hate when that's the answer to something dragging out. Or long-term storytelling, that's what it is. No, long-term storytelling is something that it's something they do that's compelling, to where it takes a couple of turns, it comes around, no one sees it coming, and it makes a lot of sense, you know? Like when Tessa Blanchard won the world title, that's not long-term storytelling, even though she was beating all the guys for a year, because everyone knew exactly where it was going. There was no surprise about it. You know, we knew exactly what they were doing. That's not freaking storytelling. So with Honor No More, clearly there's going to be something happening with PCO. Let's get to it already. Because they're saying the same stuff backstage, kind of like the way Violent by Design was. They're just saying the same stuff. What's the mission at this point? Because you haven't carried out any of it. Everyone's beat you that you're supposed to be taken down. They've all beat you. So I don't know. But I still kind of find Honor No More cool. Like, I'm still kind of intrigued in them, just because I keep thinking they're going to do something really cool. And, you know, what I've said before is with Eddie Edwards, with his heel turn, I don't think that's done a whole lot for him. We should have been turning on, I've said this 2 or 3 times, we should have been turning on the TV every week, like, what's Eddie Edwards going to do today? You know, they had a real, I would say we thought that back when he got his eye messed up by Sammy and his character started changing. People were kind of along for the ride. Like, where is this going? And then once they're like, oh, he's turning into Tommy Dreamer 2.0, then people are like, I don't really care anymore. But there was intrigue at first. And that's what I felt with him now. But Yeah, his colors change and his music change, but it's like kind of the same wrestling outfit. It's the same mannerisms when he comes down. Now the promos are better. You know, he's not completely lost, but I just feel like there was a lot more juice to squeeze out of it, and it's just we're just not getting that. Gail Kim was backstage with Deonna and Chelsea. And this was an episode we didn't get Scott D'Amore on. Oh my effing God. He's finally not, Josh, pulling that shit. But we get Gail, which we would rather see Gail. But what I didn't like about the segment was that she sounded like she was trying to be Scott D'Amore. Like she was trying to have that like wisecracky joke style. It was exactly, it's almost like he took. Or she took Scott's segment, like his script, like he was originally penned in. Oh my gosh, I'm stumbling all over myself. Originally penciled in for it, and said, "Hey, I can't make it. Can you do it? Just read this." That's kind of what I felt, you know. So I hope that's not where they're going with it. Like I like her just being Gail. Trey Miguel had a match with Laredo Kid. Now there's one theme about the matches on this show. We knew who was going to win every single match. There was no intrigue. No, you know, my curiosity was not piqued. I wonder how this is going to go. We knew who was going to win every single match because it featured many people who don't beat anybody. That being said, excellent match, better than Speedball and Allen Angels. Really, really good match. Laredo Kid couldn't beat a fly. He couldn't beat a fly with a fly swatter. He couldn't beat a dead man with a bat. I mean, he goes in these matches and we're like, he is gonna lose. He has all these near falls and roll-ups, and he's always has this look of shock on his face. Like, I can't believe I didn't pull that off. Like, well, you haven't pulled it off. You have one win over John Skyler, and that's it. I think there was one other win because he got like the number one contendership for the X Division Championship, but then they just put someone else in the match and it didn't matter. But as a talent, he's a lot of fun to watch. Impact just doesn't know what to do with luchadors. And luchadors aren't really hot right now. There was a period of time where the AAA stuff was really, really hot. We're not there right now. And apparently Impact feels the same way because if you wear a mask, you're not beating anybody on this show. But I was entertained with it quite a bit. Trey Miguel was selling from Against All Odds. You know, that's excellent stuff. That's really excellent stuff. We'll see how that plays into him going forward. Maybe he just sold it for the match to, you know, make what happened logical and sensical. But we'll see if it, you know, what happens. What's next for Trey Miguel though? Because he's like Ace Austin. You can't just keep. I mean, I said the same thing about Ace Austin. You can't just be like, oh, you're wrestling. Number one contendership for the X Division Championship. Like Trey Miguel needs to start taking some steps forward as well. That's where they failed with Jake something. You know, when there was the opportunity for him to take the next step, they didn't do it. You know, you could say that with Rohit Raju as well. When the opportunity was there to take the next step, they did not do that with him. But yes, X Division implications, whatever that word is. After this, implications, that's what I was trying to say. They had, I know I feel like I'm pointing out things I didn't like about the show. I like the show. This I didn't like. This Ric Flair moment of the week presented by StarCast. I thought this was like borderline pathetic. Ric Flair has never has said anything nice about this company. Now we can say guys like Nick Aldis kind of say their shit, you know what I mean? But they acknowledge, hey, without AJ Styles too, you know, but they at the end of the day, they acknowledge like, hey, I got my start there. I wouldn't be where I am without this. Like Ric Flair at one point in time when he first got to TNA was very grateful. He said, hey, you guys are giving me the opportunity to wrestle again. I didn't think I could wrestle anymore. WWE couldn't told me I couldn't wrestle anymore. You know, so that's kind of what he was saying at the time. But you know, he says some pretty shitty things about the company. And it's like a girl, you know, breaks up with you, not even breaks up with you, someone that you like, and you're just texting them and they never respond, and you know, and then they talk shit about you, and you're like, okay, cool. And then 3 months later, you're just like, hey, what's up? Like, you just text them again, like, just I'm you're just ready to get hurt again. So this was like borderline pathetic for me. What does Ric Flair do on the show? What was his? I know he's Ric Flair. What did he really do for Impact? I mean, he did some Fortune stuff, some Jay Lethal stuff. I mean, it wasn't like he was doing nothing, but I mean, what did he do that people are still talking about? You know, this was he probably doesn't even acknowledge that this was part of his career. So I didn't really care for that. They had Joe Doering and Diener backstage after this, run into the Motor City Machine Guns. Why are we supposed to believe that wrestlers are just hanging out backstage against the wall talking? In this era of cell phones, where we're content with just sitting by ourselves and texting and surfing the internet, we just have wrestlers just standing in the hallway, just leaning up against the wall, conversing because they're bored and have nothing else to do. And it's always the person who just they just so happen to need to run into is right there. So I didn't care for the backstage stuff, if you could tell with this episode. They ran the Killer Kelly vignette. People should be really excited about this. People really wanted her to join the Knockouts division after she did the Knockouts Tag Team Championship stuff. I think she's got a good name. She's got a good look. People seem to really, really like her. I was not impressed with the wrestling when she had a couple of matches on the show. I'm not gonna lie to you on that. Is she a better wrestler than me? Yes. I'm slow. I'm not mobile. I have weak ankles. So she's a better wrestler than me. But I still, as a fan, didn't really enjoy her matches. I didn't see anything particularly good and special. But she was in losing predicaments. You know, now she comes in as a single wrestler. She's a singles wrestler. She's probably going to get a initial push similar to Masha. That's what I think is going to happen. That's what makes sense. And then they might run into each other down the road. Who knows? But I know people are very excited for Killer Kelly coming. So that's awesome. America's Most Wanted is still a thing backstage. It's not that I'm downplaying America's Most Wanted, but okay, it served its purpose. What are we doing now? I love James Storm though. It just Chris Harris just I you know, he did okay in the match. He did okay, but I just really question what you do with him at this point. PCO, he's always with Vincent. So there, I think those guys are gonna stay together no matter what. Took on Black Taurus. Not gonna hear me say Black Taurus like they say it. Black Taurus. This was another match. We knew who was gonna win. I acknowledge it was a good match. I wasn't super into it because I don't really like PCO that much. But PCO has come a long way in his career for what he's able to do at this stage in his career. I saw him at WrestleCon years ago in New Orleans. And I mean, if you haven't been to WrestleCon, there's just lines of fans for these people. I remember specifically seeing him, and it wasn't that people weren't going up to him because, you know, they go up to everybody, but he was sitting by himself for quite a bit of it doing nothing. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't one of the first guys like, oh, let's go talk to Pierre Lafitte or whatever the hell his name was. And he's really reinvented himself since then. So that I appreciate as a wrestling fan. I like someone who can really give himself a makeover and then like do something with it and make it convincing. I mean, he's making this work. I'm just not necessarily a huge fan of him. Doesn't mean I dislike him. We just can't like everybody. I like Black Taurus a lot better. I knew he wasn't going to win the freaking match. Of course he didn't. But you know, you're dragging out the PCO Honor No More stuff a little bit longer because he gets the win. So now all of a sudden PCO is a winner. We'll see. We'll see what they do from there. But to me, the storyline is a super effort, super effing boring. Afterwards, though, they corner Crazy Steve, and then Heath comes out, and it's just. I actually sort of like Heath, but I don't like anything they have him do. There's just the story he's involved with. Bullet Club had a little interview backstage. What was cool about this is like the first time we saw on Impact Television, we see the four of them together, the four Impact guys. Which is wild because for the longest time, Impact had nobody in the Bullet Club. And then they tease, hey, there's going to be one person who joins. And I'm like, who the hell do they want? And it, you know, Chris Bay, perfect. We've been excited for what the Bullet Club could mean for him because we like Chris Bay. And now Ace Austin's involved. And of course, the Bad Brothers. So this was kind of okay, but now they're going to wrestle Honor No More next week. I mean, just like the Violent by Design stuff with Josh Alexander. I mean, my God. You're just dragging these out because who wins next week? If the Bullet Club wins, Honor No More looks like a bunch of goofs. If Honor No More wins, the Bullet Club is going to end up wanting another rematch. So what the hell? What are they doing here? One of these two matches, the Violent by Design one and the Honor No More matches, one of these two matches, I think is going to have some fuckery. Because you got. They're almost the same exact freaking storyline, but you got PCO, they're teasing, breaking him up, and then you got Eric Young teasing, breaking off from Violent by Design or kicking them to the curb or telling them they're losers. Like it's really like the same story, just tweaked a little bit. I can't imagine both are going to have a clean finish. I wouldn't be shocked if neither of them did. But the match, I don't care about either of those matches. I cannot begin to tell you how much I don't. Brian Myers was walking around backstage after this. To me, Brian Myers is hilarious. He took that picture and signed it, and he's funny. He's a funny dude. And then he walks up to Johnny Swinger, another funny dude. Zicky Dice, kind of funny, you know, in spurts, in his moments. He can be good, he can be entertaining. But it was an entertaining segment. And then Bhupinder Gujara comes. And all I was thinking in my head, this is the talented kid. Looks like $1 million. But what is the benefit of having him as a babyface? Is it because they didn't want to have too many Indian heels and just have this stereotype? If you're Indian, you're going to be a bad guy. He would have benefited so much more from working with Raj and Shira. And then if you break them off later, which is usually inevitable with this kind of stuff, then okay, cool. That'll work. But what was the point of him coming in as a baby face? What I don't understand who really benefited from it. Like, yeah, the people kind of liked him. Well, they like him. The fans like him. You know, he comes out with this horrible finisher that doesn't look good. And before you know it, he's in the reverse battle royal. So what was this all about? Now, if you're trying to push him to like do something, to be something, I get it, but they haven't. So why, I don't understand why he's a baby face. He comes out here like he can't really talk. I mean, he could talk. He knows the English language. He can speak. But his promos are not good. The acting is not good. And obviously he doesn't speak crystal clear English. So, I mean, it doesn't translate, it doesn't hit, and a guy like Brian Myers is going to talk circles around a dude like that. And now next week we're getting Bhupinder versus Johnny Swinger. Set your DVRs. Then we got this random Shira versus Rich Swann match. Rich Swann, who is one of the few left with a great, great, great theme song in the company, probably means they're going to change it like they did Taya's and give him something like Jonah's theme or something. at first I said, what is this random ass match doing on the show? And then they, and at least I give them props for this. They took us back to Against All Odds, and there was a little interview with Rich backstage, and you know, Raj walks up to him, which he seems to do quite a bit. That's his main mission in the company, is to walk up to people while they're being interviewed. But I love everything Rich Swann does. Everything. Like, there's nothing that you're going to see Rich Swann do and see, oh, that freaking sucked. Like, this dude, to me, is the best wrestler in the company. Just for my liking, you know? He wins the match. Not even with his finisher. He does a 450. What do you do with Shira at this point? And Raj, like, they, again, don't beat anybody. Everyone can't win. I get that. Like, some people have to be in a jobber capacity. It's just I would rather see them bring on the John Skylers and stuff, where you're like, hey, this guy's just there to lose. We just know he's there to lose. But then when you've got guys like Shira, who's taking up screen time with these backstage segments, like promising we're going to do this, we're going to win this, and then they don't do any of that. And then 2 weeks later, they come out and do the same thing, and then they have a match, and they don't win. John Skyler's not taking up, he hasn't even been on TV in forever, but he's not taking up time on our screens. You know what I mean? He's not backstage wasting 5 minutes of the show. So that's kind of the difference for me. Bring in some guys we know we're going to lose. That's fine. But if you got guys like this, that you've got a manager-type dude and a big, you know, bruiser, and they're threatening people, but then they don't deliver on anything that they say. And that's kind of a theme. Honor No More, Violent by Design, a lot of the time, they don't deliver on what they say they're going to do. But Swann, he's just so masterful, and he makes Shira look like a real monster. Swann can sell his ass off. You know, he does all the flippy shit, but it's logical. Like, that's why I like what he does. He's not flipping just for the sake of flipping. Like, he does it because it's flashy, but he doesn't do it for no reason. You know, his wrestling psychology is excellent. But I love Rich Swann, man. I also like Dijel Shaw. She was backstage with the Influence. I like Tennille's hair a lot. No, I like Tennille a lot. I don't know quite what they're doing here. I don't know if Madison is going to end up teaming with Giselle, because I think Tennille's doing the movie. Masha Slamovich is clearly going to write her off television to go do what she's got to do. It's pretty clear. But I don't want Tennille to go anywhere, because this is a good role for Madison Rayne, and I don't want her to fall back into some role that we don't want to see her in, pop up on commentary or something like that. I like the dynamic with Giselle Shaw. But they're, you know, three of my favorites. I enjoy them quite a bit. What I didn't enjoy was Ty Valkyrie and Rosemary backstage. The magic that the two of them had is just not there. But I also pointed out the same about Mike and Maria and some other people who, when they returned, EC3 when he showed up. There's something about the current presentation of Impact where we just don't click with who's on screen the way we did in Orlando. And previous to that, there's just something missing. But it seemed like these two's dynamic was such an important part of the show at one point, and now they're just backstage, excuse me, doing silly shit. They're going to enter the Undead Realm, which not very many people like. They've done some decently entertaining stuff. I don't think it's horrible. You know, when they try to pretend it's horror and people are scared, that's when I'm like, you're insulting me. They're not doing anything too stupid, in my opinion, but it's still not very good. A lot of people don't like it. They got away from the hokey shit. You know, Jim Cornette won't watch Impact. The one time he tuned in, it was for Who Shot Bravo. And I was just in a Facebook group yesterday. It was today or yesterday. It was the same shit. someone doesn't watch Impact, but they tune in for Who Shot Bravo, and they haven't watched since. Or they happen to tune in for that episode, got the Bravo stuff, haven't watched it since. And I'm like, well, that storyline was forever ago, but people tie that stuff in with what Impact is doing. So the Undead Realm stuff, I don't know if anyone really wants to see it. I guess some of the diehards of Rosemary and all that, they're going to go look for Havoc. We'll see what the storyline is, but these are the Knockouts Tag Team Champions. About to do some hokey shit. The only thing that's going to like make me like take my words back is if they find Havoc and she is there with somebody else, with another partner, and turns on them. You know, that's about, okay, that's good shit. What do they got? But if they just go rescue Havoc and then she's around, I don't think I have interest in that. But I can't imagine she would incorporate herself with Ty and Rosemary. So I think the potential for something good is coming. I'll say that. But right now, I don't have a whole lot of interest in the Undead Realm. But, you know, just the pink lights in the background and everything, I mean, is this supposed to be, you know, scary and intimidating? I don't really know. But I guess Ty is going to the Undead Realm to be a friend, to be a pal. She's going to leave John Morrison at home with Fufu or whatever the dog is, and she's going to enter the realm. She may not come back. She's not even going to call her husband. She's just going to enter the realm and roll the dice and see what happens. So main event of the show, Mia Yim versus Jordynne Grace. What I say at the top, I said this was the best wrestling show they have put out in a long time. Wrestling. All the other in-between stuff was not good. When I say it was not good, that is my opinion. I'm not saying it's fact. That's just the way I speak. It's not good. I wasn't entertained by 99% of it. But the matches were good. I don't want Impact to fall into a company. It's like, we're just relying on giving you good matches, and then the stories turn to shit. You know, Ring of Honor for the longest time, almost the entire time, was just like, hey, we're just giving you awesome matches. All right, cool. There's a fan base for that. The Impact fan base, I don't think, wants to just, oh, you know, 5-star, 4-star, what's Meltzer got to say? We appreciate the good matches, but I don't think we're, you know, that's all we want. Right now, it seems like that's what they're leaning on. It's just, we're just giving you good wrestling. Okay, if go one way or another. I don't know, folks. I just want to get back to some really cool storylines, because usually the creative side, for the most part, was one of the things that they've done a pretty good job with, like consistently over the years. Yeah, there's some bad creative. Every company has bad creative, but that's all subjective too, because some person might like the Undead Realm, some person might hate it. Same with Who Shot Bravo and Wrestle House. Like, I liked Wrestle House. I didn't like any of the other shit. Like, Swinger's Palace, like, was killing me. You know, we all like different things, but if they make it to, like, come here to have amazing matches with Josh Alexander, man, I just don't think that's it. There's got to be a better balance of that with really good stories. Because Impact, you know, they can be that company. I always say, who's their target audience? I don't think they know. The target audience should be the fan who likes good wrestling, but likes good stories also, because it always seems like it's one or the other with companies. You know, they go one way, but they don't deliver on the other end. You know, Impact can be that company. Like, hey, you're going to watch good, logical, sensible matches that don't go too long, that they don't have 50,000 near falls. Because if you notice with Impact's matches, they don't go for the pin that much. That better protects a lot of the moves. If you're not just having to find a way to, new ways to kick out of something that you shouldn't have had to kick out of, you know, the super finishers and all that. So the matches are very logical. But you can convey that, like, you're going to get logical wrestling here, And then you're going to get creative storytelling outside of the box stories, the stuff that no one else is doing, no one else is touching, you know? I'm not saying that's what they do, but, you know, you can present both and bring in both those types of people. But right now it's like Josh Alexander just has a bunch of great matches. So let's everyone else just have a bunch of great matches. And then we're going to run into each other backstage. We're going to bump into each other. We're going to interrupt each other doing interviews. We're going to do all that crap. But another top-notch knockouts match. I think I said Jordynne Grace versus Mia Yim. I don't even know if I said the wrestlers. It's getting pretty late for me. I really should be in bed right now because I get up early. It's Mia Yim and Deonna Purrazzo. And it's a number one contendership match. I knew Mia Yim was going to win. I don't like seeing Deonna lose, but I really do think her and Chelsea are going to get the knockouts tag team titles and have them for a while. I really think they're going to have them for a while. And I've been saying with Mia Yim, I was like, she's going to get that big title shot. That's coming. Like, Impact was not going to wait to give her a real program for the championship. And I've been saying she's going to be in the main event of Bound for Glory. Like, I'm sure of it. And I'm still sure of it. I still think one way or another, she's going to be in it. If it's a 3-4 knockout match, whatever it is, like, she's going to be there. She's going to be one of the people. It might be a rematch of this match with Jordynne Grace. I think the Jordynne Grace match, the emergence match, I think we're going to be talking about that one as one of the top, like, five knockouts matches of all time. I really, truly think that. I really think they're going to deliver to that point that we're just like, yo, this is a classic. We need to watch this again. What they did with Trey Miguel and Speedball Mike Bailey last show, this can be that equivalent for the knockouts. I think it's going to be, I hope it main events the show. I hope it's the last thing that goes on, but we don't know what Josh is going to do. We don't have a clue what Josh is going to do. It's almost like we're going to fight Violent by Design next week because he has to wrestle somebody. That gives us time to figure out who the hell is going to have a program for the title. Like, I have no idea. None. I mean, Steve Macklin makes sense. But then he just kind of aligned himself with Moose. And I don't know who's going to wrestle this dude. There's probably going to be some goof from Japan. I don't know. Is Chris Harris in the main event emergence and take on Josh Alexander for the Impact World title? Probably. That's all I got for you guys tonight. I need to get a little shut-eye. I get up. Tomorrow's actually my day off, but I'm driving out to Indiana, go to a WNBA game, watch my Indiana Fever play. So I got to leave kind of early because it's an early game. Instead of my one day to sleep in. I'm going to take some time for myself to go do something. So thanks for checking in to the stream. Sorry I couldn't get to questions. As I said, it's kind of difficult for me to do a one-man show and start reading off questions and all that. Thanks for rocking with me. I'm your boy, BQ. It is the Impact Lounge, and I am out.